Alrighty. That's the father of rock and roll, Charles Edward Anderson Berry, also known as Chuck Berry, performing his legendary 1958 hit, Johnny Be Good. Chuck Berry died of natural causes Saturday at his home in Wentzville, Missouri. He was 90 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we have before us all kinds of crazy things happening in Washington, D.C. that we're going to be talking about today. I tell you, well, as you know, the House Intelligence Committee today opens its much-anticipated probe into Russia's alleged interference in the 2016 presidential election to produce a win, it is said, for then-candidate Donald Trump. And more broadly, they're looking into the extent of Moscow's alleged influence in the now Trump administration. FBI Director James Comey and National Security Agency Director Mike Rogers are set to testify, and they already have begun that process, which means that they are likely, of course, to be asked about related cyber attacks the agencies recently investigated, including Trump's charge that former President Barack Obama had his campaign headquarters at Trump Tower in New York wiretapped during the election, and that key Trump advisors and campaign personnel were in frequent contact with Russian diplomatic personnel. Well, that's the story. There's a hearing, and it's going to go wide and deep. But of course, we'll be taking a look at elements of the story that will not be part of regular news coverage. And we'll be doing this because situations like this almost never are one-dimensional. There are all kinds of other things happening in the background that are very, very important. In fact, they're stories of their own, but they won't be, for all kinds of reasons, they won't be connected to a simple outline of a simple story. The straightforward story, the straightforward story being the hearing, and the hearing having a fairly recent genesis, the election of 2016, and Russia's alleged interference in the election so as to produce a victory for Donald Trump, a loss for Hillary Clinton, and most recently, the other part of the story, which they are outlining as a very simple, I mean, in terms of a storyline, it's not complicated. The additional element being, to what degree does Russia currently have ongoing relationships of influence via the Trump administration? All right. I'm going to ask you to put on your wonderful analytical hats. And we are going to talk about the environment of the story. Remember, in every situation that we look at, no matter what the media tells us the story is and where we ought to fix our attention, and we ought to fix our attention on the actual hearing itself, right? The ongoing hearing on these matters. And the story is about, as we said, just to remind you, the story is, according to the media, the story is very straightforward. There's a hearing being conducted by the House Intelligence Committee looking at the claim by President Trump that President Obama, his predecessor, ordered his campaign headquarters in Trump Tower in New York City bugged or wiretapped, as he put it, during the 2016 presidential election. And we're looking at the committee is looking also at the degree to which allegations that the Russian government had undue influence and even participation in influencing the outcome of the 2016 election by having contact and still having contact with key personnel of the Trump campaign at that time, and now with the Trump personnel administration-wise. To what degree has Russia actually infiltrated itself into the inner workings, the innards of the U.S. government? Okay, that's a pretty big order, a tall order, and it's a substantial story by itself. And we will get to learn what happened today in the course of the committee hearing. What we want to do, though, is to remember that whenever we analyze things like this, or we listen to speeches, and in the situation that we're in now with the story, listening to testimony by key individuals, we always have to analyze the environment in which this is being done, so that we can get a very comprehensive appreciation for what is actually happening. It prepares us to go to another dimension of the story, despite what the media will tell us. And the media would tell us, you know, straightforward things. It would tell us, you know, this is what happened, this is who was called, this is what they said. And all matters would be confined specifically to the hearing and very little outside of it. But when we talk about these kinds of things, we always keep in mind that there is an environment here, an environment to the story, to the activities involved in the story. And we always have to keep that in mind, because let's be clear. This story is highly charged, extremely political, and will have long-standing consequences. So it is not a simple story. It is not a simple hearing. This is very, very serious stuff. So we will take a look at the hearing from all these vantage points, so that we get an appreciation for what is actually unfolding in Washington, D.C., and how we are to interpret it. All right? 888-874-4888 is the number to call, so we can get into this conversation. And when we get into this conversation, as you will see for yourself, you too will be amazed at how multidimensional the story really is. And it's almost as if what we will be discussing should be the story, and the story that we will be told in the news later on this evening, they will summarize it, and it will be the basis of further discussion, but it will be tightly focused, tightly controlled, and there are reasons for that. So the first question is, what do you make of the environment of the story? What is the environment of the story as you appreciate it? In what environment is this hearing occurring? And what is the significance of that environment? How might that shape this story, even if you haven't seen it? What would you say is the environment of the story, and how will that shape the information we will know and get to know about the story. Any takers? 888-874-4888. Now, this is high-level media literacy that we're doing now, because we have the advantage of observing a story actually unfolding before our eyes. And we will be persuaded to think that, you know, it is what we see. The story, no matter who tells it, will inevitably tell us that the story is what we're seeing and what we're hearing, and it's about this hearing. All right? The story is about a hearing. And there are high-profile people involved. There's a former president and a current president. There are the heads of intelligence agencies involved. There's a foreign government involved. There are operatives involved. A whole sheet full of laws that allegedly have been broken here. And many people have already, in the media, they have already categorized this story as, and even Donald Trump himself had categorized it as being bigger than Watergate. So this is no silly little incidental story. This is a huge story. And we will talk about why. What are the reasons this is a huge story? But first, we have to appreciate the context of the story. And that alone is a story in and of itself. What can you tell us about the environment of the story to give us a leg up on how we are to treat the material coming out of these hearings and how we are to treat the coverage of this story? All right. You have gone through media literacy courses here on Lead Stories for quite some time, and now it's time to put it into serious action. This is a huge story, and it is going to become even huger over the next couple of days, not because the media would want it to happen, or because the powers that be would want it to happen, but because if you look at the story in the way that a conscientious journalist would, you would see how huge the dimensions are of this story. So who will take us through the first piece of discussing the environment of the story and why we should pay attention to the environment of the story? All right. We will start there and go forward from there. We have no calls yet? Okay, Lincoln from New York.
Hi,
let's
Eugene.
Hear. Hello, how are you?
I'm okay. Still cold in New York.
Oh, well. It's life. All right.
Take us through
your perspective. What would you say is important to appreciate about the environment of this story?
In many of the previous times that I called, this is what I was really trying to address, and I was glad that you used the phrase, you said one-dimensional. And this story actually started long ago. And this story was, it involved mostly power play and manipulation of the people.
I'm going to interrupt you a couple of times because I want to immediately react to something that you say, okay? Let's talk about that word power play. Who is involved in this power play?
It is the Clintons. It is also Obama. It is the CIA. It is the FBI. It's the military. It is George Soros. And George Soros's people. It probably also involves Bush. Because there's a particular line that is supposed to be followed. Like Obama came in, and Obama actually continued Bush's policies. One of the first things Obama said when he came in, you remember when Nancy Pelosi, when she ran, one of the things she spoke about that they would seek to impeach Bush. Suddenly, that went off the table. When Obama came in, one of the first things he said, oh, we're going to forget about Iraq, and let's move on. And he moved on in places where you could see that he was afraid and that he was positioning himself for his career and not for the people. And
Observing the coverage of the story, people should be prepared and should pay attention to the fact that there is this element of major power plays involved.
Yes.
Okay. And so how will we know that?
Therefore, we will never hear the truth. But it is very obvious. But we, like you said, we all choose to be one-dimensional. Like, you remember that time when I called in and I spoke about the women's movement? This is also part of what I was alluding to when I said to you, when I said to us, actually, the family, our family, which you are presently presiding over, when I said the woman's so-called woman's march in D.C. was a big hoax because it was organized by George Soros and these billionaires, and so it was very misleading. If you notice.
All right, but let's. I want to stick to this subject at hand, this so-called hearing that we are going to be reading a lot about, hearing a lot about, seeing a lot about. And I want you to, if you can, give us an idea how this power play, you identified some of the elements of the elements involved in this power play. Are we likely to see coverage of that in stories, or is it something that we have to anticipate way down the road?
No, you will not see it because the news media is going to just present a one-dimensional report, and it's going to be nothing but lies. And what they're doing is they're playing upon the people's naivety. And the news media themselves, the funny thing is, you know, this story is filled with a lot of subterfuge and a lot of cabal, a lot of intrigue, but even the people involved in the intrigue, they themselves are one-dimensional. So it's actually becoming confusing. It's similar to something that happened years ago. You know, the CIA, when they were in Vietnam, they were telling lies about America winning the war, and eventually they start believing their own lies. And this is something that has happened a lot in this country, where they play a trick on the people, but they end up also playing a trick on themselves because they believe their lies. And there is many things that's occurring. There's that.
But I want to move along because we have quite a few people on. But you got us started today, and you are absolutely correct. There are many elements involved here that speak to what you pointed out as a power play. And we will observe that probably a couple of days down the road, but if we're lucky. But I'm glad that you brought that to our attention. Thanks a lot for getting us started today, Lincoln. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, you, Teresa, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I actually watched up until the time of the show, the hearings today, and it was like, it was almost akin to watching, listening to a 007 James Bond movie, if you could believe that, because it has the intrigue of espionage and the players that I see, because in the beginning it was really kind of difficult, but, you know, there really is a faction and a fight and a power play between the NSA and the FBI and the CIA. You know, Comey kept asking, they kept asking Comey, more Comey than Rogers, about leaks and who could be the source of the leak and is it legal to be leaking this information and, you know, who was in the room. I mean, the hearings are, I think, are almost about who is really in charge of the power, the power elite in this world, not just in this country, but in this world, because, of course, they invoked whether the UK was also involved, whether their intelligence community was involved. And there was some reference to when the Angela Merkel's office was bugged by the Obama administration. I mean, all of this was coming into play. Mm-hmm. So we will never, the public will never hear that this is a struggle about who is really in charge.
But is there's a story right there. If, let's put on your journalist hat for a minute here. And if you were assigned to the story, based on what you have just said to us, what would you say was one of the most illuminating things about this hearing today? You said it.
Well, other than the fact that most of the questions that were asked were never answered because the answer was, I can't talk about it. So nobody will ever know the answers. Because they're hiding behind the shroud of, well, it's classified information and we just can't talk about it.
But you, the story, would it not be something akin to the state of affairs in this world is exceedingly chaotic? They give you the impression, these agencies and these agency heads give you the impression that we are all the more safe and sound and protected because these agencies exist. They're in charge. They know what they're doing. They're well coordinated and everything.
But that's not what you just told us. No, based on what I heard this morning, nothing could be farther from the truth.
Well, that in fact is the truth. What you got, and that's a story in itself. We got a signal, a very clear signal of the chaotic nature of the intelligence world right now, as it exists right now. People are fighting. There's a lot of infighting in the United States intelligence world, and you are absolutely correct. Do you remember some time ago I talked about the fact that Donald Trump will soon find out who's really in charge of this country, and it would be the intelligence community that he will have to answer to? You just told us, and it is a spot on that, by the way, is a huge, huge story. The crazy state of affairs within the intelligence community in the United States. And this just opened the window to that. People are fighting. Comey is in full rebellion against his boss. There's deep division. The CIA is not really cooperating with the NSA, and the NSA hates the FBI, and everybody's fighting for turf. It is a chaotic situation, and it is not clear who is actually accountable and obedient, if you will, to the President of the United States. So what you just said was an indication of one of the most important elements in the story that we can't forget at all when analyzing it, that much of this story depends on a world in chaos. They're making it look like, you know, they're proceeding in an orderly fashion because, well, you know, they got everything in good gear, and this is going to proceed like any other inquiry. Nothing could be further from the truth. This is a chaotic event happening in a world that is itself super chaotic. They haven't straightened themselves out yet. And each of the elements that they are intending to investigate has its own bundle of chaos. So it looked orderly, didn't it? I mean, there was a committee. They're sitting on nice leather chairs and in a nice room, and it looks very official. But there's chaos. Who is actually following order and procedure here? How could this hearing possibly be trusted to have a just outcome when it is occurring in an environment of so much chaos? And you said it. So you hired. You are hired, Patricia. This is the one of the hugest elements in the story. Well, let's see what Sean has to say from New York. You're on the air.
Hi, you, Therese. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. Could you give us an idea of some of the important elements of this story? It just began today, and it will continue. But what will you say we must appreciate about the environment of the story and what it should inform us about the actual event itself?
Okay, this chaos, as you said, that you're seeing before you, this was started by Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee with this whole anti-Russian, Russian hacked the DNC hysteria. And it seems like, just to me, ever since that was started, they won't let this story go. The story has taken on legs. And it seems like Russia has become the focus of the reason that the Clintons, quote unquote, Clinton lost the election. And there is a skullduggery going on from a foreign power. Now, Trump also added to this chaos by, you know how Trump is. He likes to go half-cocked and tweet, you know, things that are untrue. And he added to this chaos by himself by insinuating that the previous administration, particularly President Obama, is spying on him. Or was spying on him. Now, when I look at all of this, I come away with the conclusion that, as you guys said before, yes, there's a big power play going on between all the agencies, but it seems like this all started with the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton stating the Russians hacked us. And from that day forth, the chaos began, and it hasn't left. And Trump, again, has added to that chaos. Now, when you look at the way the questions are being floated, it seems to me that right now the media and the establishment are lined up basically to say they want to put the blame on Russia, number one, and then they want to say, well, there was no wrongdoing on the Obama administration for number two. So I'm looking at this and saying the fix is in other words. So I don't think we're going to learn, how should I put it, anything mind-blowing other than what the media has already been spinning for the past 6 months or so.
Okay, when you say the fix is in, what exactly is the fix?
Okay, the fix is in meaning the intelligence community is not going to reveal. For instance, if you've read all the articles that have been published with regard to Russian interference, right? They never definitively in these articles state Russia definitely did it. They always state words like "we strongly believe" or "we have sufficient evidence." But it's nothing definitive that if you were to go into a court of law, you can't go into a court of law with "we believe" or "we assess." You have to go into a court of law with facts, you know, hard evidence. And everything I've seen printed so far has not said it's ultra hard evidence. It's just, it's conjecture, so to speak. And what I'm saying is when I say the fix is in is that the intelligence community isn't going to reveal what they know or how they obtain this information, and what they're going to do is dump it back on the lap of the Russians. And then, of course, Trump will get some blame, too, for making the claim that the Obama administration wiretapped him. Now, when Trump
But I want to ask you a question immediately, because it's important. If you can assess that the to borrow the word of the of the intelligence community, if you can determine that the intelligence community is unlikely to actually state, I mean, in its fullness, what the facts are, why then would we have a hearing called, and we have the chairman of this committee and others basically calling them as witnesses to testify? If you can determine that there is going, from the word go, they are not going to tell you everything, then what do you say about the presentation of, say, Comey and others, NSA Director Mike Rogers and others? Why are they called as witnesses?
This could all be one gigantic dog and pony show for the public to see. Remember, like I said, the chaos has started some 6 months ago. The story has taken legs. So now that it has a lot of legs, they've got to see this thing through. So in order to see this story through, we've got to have a grand finale of theater. This hearing is the grand finale of theater.
So all right, now let me ask you again. We are seeing people who are called, but they can't talk. What about the people who have been talking but have not yet been called? And I'm talking, you identified a key one, that's Hillary Clinton. If Hillary Clinton started out by alleging Russian interference, would it not be natural to ask her how she came by this information and what does she know? And in what ways could she testify that her campaign was affected specifically by the Russians? Wouldn't you expect that she would be giving testimony?
Yes, exactly, you would expect that. But again, if you're looking at the way this is lined up in sort of a partisan fashion. In other words, you've got the entire liberal, so quote-unquote, media and Democratic establishment going against the sitting president, so to speak, in other words. And basically they're lining this up so that the blame falls on the Russians. Hillary Clinton is somewhat vindicated. So since we're going to try to vindicate her, we don't need her testimony. We just need to put this story back on the boogeyman that is the Russians. And we also need to make Trump look like an idiot by him inferencing President Obama tapping his phone line, so to speak.
Okay. So if I had given you the task as a reporter or an editor to consider how you would instruct your reporters to cover the story, the angles that you hope that they would touch on, one of the angles would be a lot is not being said that needed to be said because certain people are just not going to be participating in this.
That's correct. Well, that is correct, that certain people are not going to be participating in this. And again, that this is all for show, and we need a grand finale to present to the public. Remember, the public has been beaten over their head for 6 months with allegations of Russian interference. So as far as the public is concerned, they're already convinced that Vladimir Putin is the devil and Russia is guilty. So this is just an ending or a grand finale to what they've been programmed for the past 6 months. And again,
you've given us some extraordinary insight. You see how a simple story, when you sit down and you think about it, before you even read it or see it, you know, all the way through, can anticipate what is going to happen when you analyze the situation.
Right.
And you've done a magnificent job today, Sean. Thank you so much for calling and participating.
No problem. All right.
Thank you. Chris from New York, you're on the air. Hello, Chris. Are you there?
Hi. Good afternoon. Yes. How are you?
Good afternoon. Fine. Thank you.
I just want to say I've heard Lincoln and the previous caller as well, all of them, in fact, but I just wanted to focus on Lincoln one moment. I was thinking to myself, if I knew this man's phone, I would just call him and invite him for a cup of coffee. He was right on the money. He covered all of the points. I was taking down notes here. And he mentioned one-dimensional. This is what is happening. Two points I'd like to focus on. What they're doing is an indoctrination of the public mind, this constant repetition of the hacking by the Russians and the interference in the elections over and over and over. This becomes excruciating for most people, this repetition. And so it's kind of like an echo that ingrains itself in their mind. And in a way, anyone who's halfway interested or even watches the news and isn't even interested would pick it up at some point with absolutely no analysis whatsoever. So what they're actually doing is they're attacking there's an attack on our common sense. And when I say common sense, I mean the understanding of things, of where we live and our relationship and to others, you know, like Russians or outside of our so-called borders. They're attacking that common sense that people have. That assault on that common sense that we have is it's very insidious what they're doing.
But let me ask you, is there no possibility in your view that the Russians in fact were interfering with the elections?
Well, I'll answer. The hacking, okay, very briefly, maybe they did hack it. That is not the worst thing in the world. The United States, all of the countries hack each other. Okay, all of the countries they bug each other's phones. This is what they do. Now,
yes, but I'm saying let's stick with the
no, it's
idea.
Possible that they
here
hacked
is
it.
A committee that is holding hearings, and one of the reasons they're holding these hearings is because is predicated on the charge that Russia, in fact, manipulated the 2016 presidential election. This is what they're investigating to arrive at the outcome in favor of Donald Trump and the defeat of Hillary Clinton. This was a charge that we just heard from Sean spelled out in greater detail. She raised the charge. She's not been called yet to discuss how she found this out and whether it's true. But let's deal with this. The committee is entitled to, and it is in fact commanded to investigate situations like this, because this is a very serious threat to what they call the democratic process. We're talking about subverting a national vote here. Is there any possibility? Do you give them any room for a legitimate inquiry here into whether, in fact, Russia did manipulate the vote?
Well, I'll tell you, I personally, at this point, I'll go past the hacking charge and the manipulation, and there are two separate points, and I was going to cover this. It's interesting to me that no one actually asks the question. I've asked this question repeatedly myself in some discussions that I've had, and even these blatherers on TV that pass themselves off as journalists, okay, I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel. No one asks the question, how did they actually interfere? Did they actually break into the voting machines? When I went and I voted for whomever I voted for when I voted, okay, did they break into that machine and put, you know, like, direct me in some way? Did they break into the computer and change it directly? I mean, how actually did they interfere? Because hacking and releasing information, for example, on the DNC, okay, that they manipulated the vote with Bernie Sanders, that was not a lie. I mean, we knew that before anybody ever made these charges and, you know, ran away with them. I mean, we knew that. People who were, especially for Bernie Sanders, knew what had happened with the Democratic committee, okay? I mean, they rigged it. So that, to me, is not even the issue. So that's why when I said earlier, the hacking part of it, at this point for me, I mean, sure, they could investigate anything they want. That's not, I don't find that serious because that's true. It's real. I know that that happened even before. But I'd like for them to say, how did they actually interfere? Because no one has
spoken
to that
at all. Well, they're not
going to
say that. They're not going to say that because, as we had just discussed, they will say these are matters of strict confidence, and they cannot be divulged. So as to
not
influence other people to do the same thing, and they are bound to secrecy on such things. They cannot give the details of how it was done. Okay?
Well,
so
but that's not revealing.
What I want to get from you is, what is the environment? How is this story unfolding? In what kind of environment is it unfolding? And what should we pay attention to that is missing in particular?
Well, the environment, I've heard a couple of analogies to the McCarthyism, which I'm not going to use because I don't like these coined phrases, but I'll tell you, the environment is, I'm not sure how to characterize it. The environment is very, it's like arriving at a conclusion. Okay, let's say you have a jury and the judge says, this is the decision I need for you to get at. And so you need to look at the evidence that is presented to you and work it in to this conclusion. So how would you, you know, I have to look at my thesaurus and see how I would characterize it. They've already arrived at the I mean, that is what they're giving out. They have arrived at a conclusion that Russia is guilty. And we, the people, have to understand this and go through the phony and hypocritical motions that they're going through so that we can all accept what they're telling us. You know, and I guess I would compare it to a jury. A jury that is instructed in a certain way to arrive. And a lot of these think tanks do that. You know, they do these studies and these papers. And a lot of them will kind of come to a conclusion, say, well, this is how I feel about it, so let's just manipulate the information. And rather than having information, studying it the way you are doing on your program today, and then arriving at a conclusion or the inability to arrive to a conclusion, you see, and that's what they're doing. They're starting from the decision, you know, rather the introduction. They're coming to the conclusion, and then they're going back to the introduction. You know, and one last point I'd like to make, this perception of Trump, the perception, and this is beyond what anybody thinks of Trump and his absolutely outrageous, you know, his half-cocked comments and statements, okay? This perception of Trump is exactly what is steering this whole thing. That's what they're basing it on. Because if this were someone else, I don't even know. Even if it were Hillary Clinton, with all of the negativity that she had, because her presentation is different, the approach to this would not be the same, because they wouldn't have all of this fodder. Trump gives it to them, but they've really built it up a lot over a period of time. So the perception of Trump is making this sort of, is like this mob mentality to burn somebody at the stake.
The perception of Trump, however, as we will see as this continues, the perception of Trump is also affecting the testimony of the witnesses being called. It is also reflected in the hostility of the party itself. There are many Republicans who are just so livid with Donald Trump. They can't stand him. They want
Absolutely.
Him out. And we will get to that. You'll see that. But the perception of Trump, I'm going with that phrasing, your phrasing, the perception of Trump is affecting this hearing in many, many ways.
Absolutely.
And that is part of the chaos. We have a Republican Party that is not united, that is fighting a decimated Democratic Party, but it centers on the perception by everyone involved of Trump. Trump
Absolutely.
Is in a no-win situation here.
Yes.
It's going to be interesting to notice how this plays itself into the hearing. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Utrice, could you just give me 10 more seconds? I need to make this last point. You know what's driving a lot of this, and it's very disturbing, is such deep and unadulterated hatred on both sides.
Sure.
The intent is not, you know, like I said, it's not objective, where even if you dislike the parties, you would say, well, wait a minute, this is what I'm working with. That's what they're feeding. They're feeding what's the worm that you get? You know, like a tapeworm. It's like a tapeworm, and that's what they're doing. It's very toxic. I just needed to say that because I have turned them off.
Right. I just want to get this last caller in, so because we're getting close to time. Thank you so very much for your participation today. I really appreciate it, Chris. So we have Eric from Brooklyn. You're on the air.
Hello, Utrice.
Hello. Well,
How
you're
you?
Going to have to hurry it up a little bit because we're running low on time.
Okay. So my perspective, I agree with most of the callers. I think that a part of the environment of this situation is the extraordinary criminality of this government. You know, it's coming to a head. I mean, it's, you know, the people are starting to see a little bit, because I think that Americans now understand that they are the target. The West is now the target of what they've been doing all over the world. So you see, you know, the jobs for the people that could count on going, you know, getting educated and getting a job, that's not happening. The water situation.
In the sense that people are more in the fact that people are more educated, as you are telling us now, and the fact that they're more involved, how does that affect this?
It provides a situation where now, like, the vultures are scurrying, you know? They're kind of in chaos because Trump is a me-first personality. He's someone that doesn't want to hide, you know. I mean, he's willing to play along to a certain extent, but what he's willing to not play along with is so dangerous, because the little things he says offhand and, you know, his tweets and stuff are so inflammatory. They reveal so much. And because he's not as calculating as an Obama or even a Clinton or a Bush, you know, he's not willing to play along. He feels that he's on a level at par with the oligarchs. So he's not willing to like curry their favor so much. He wants to put a stamp on his own, you know, like his own creation. He wants to be the man. And because he wants to be the man, the rest of these people have to protect themselves. You know,
well, where I agree with you, I agree with you that the people are, in fact, a major element here, because they are flexing their muscle against almost all the parties involved. They're like the neutral, true neutral party here, and they are pressing buttons on the Democrats. They're pressing the buttons on the Republicans. They're pressing the agencies' heads. You know, they're pressing buttons all over the place as this newly empowered entity. So we'll see to what degree the voices of the people will play a role in the outcome and in the conduct of this hearing. Thank you so much. And that brings us to the end of our program today. A great start. But as you can see, when you start analyzing things and you look at the environment, if you just start with the environment, you have yourself a fantastic catbird seat from which to observe this story, unfolding story. And you're quite correct, everyone who called in today, there are so many elements that have to be considered that will have incredible impact on how this story turns out. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll continue the discussion tomorrow. Bye-bye.